Okay, there we go. Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you this evening?
Good. I figured, honestly, we would sort of just jump in like we normally do with our podcasts and then just see who joins and
wonderful.
Do questions halfway through or at the end or whatever.
That's great.
After you and I sort of catch up.
Okay. Sounds good.
So, CPA. Mel. Oh, this conference. Mel.
Yeah, I had anxiety for you as you were giving me the readings on your bus with your Aeronet. I was like fretting for you.
Yeah, so I have the trip down in front of me. Mm-hmm. So I went down on the e-bus from Edmonton to Calgary. And so when I got on the bus, it was outside and like 500 ppm, right? So I get on the bus and it's like cool. It's like coasting between 500-600 to like 830. And then at like 845, it jumps to 1200 and doesn't go down again. Like it, I think it was up to about 1600, 1500, 1600 consistently for a few hours. So the air quality is not great on the e-bus. And nobody's wearing sort of respirator quality masks. So that's for sure. So the e-bus was not the greatest in terms of the Aeronet.
I'm sorry to hear that. You know, if they just put in a couple of HEPA filters in those things, then everyone's good to go, right? It doesn't take much. A little UVC light and a HEPA filter, and then it would be safe travels.
Yeah, but then that brings me to the conference. Well,
so, and how was that? It's a lot of people. Was that like the most people you've ever been around in like the last 2 years?
Oh, Mel, yes. I mean, I haven't been around before. I mean, I go to the hospital, but like not like that. Well, I'll start with, so I stayed at the actual conference hotel because my supervisor, this was like the last sort of trip he was funding for me, because usually I don't travel anywhere because I can't afford it. So he paid for the stay while I was there, and it was at the Hyatt Regency in Calgary. So I'll start with the room itself. I had sort of an air purifier running the whole time just to help with some airflow and like bathroom fan running. First of all, the windows you can't open. So I couldn't increase airflow in the windows in the hotel room. And that ran from, I'd say, about 900 ppm to like 1800, depending on how bad the airflow was in the room. So that's okay because I'm by myself, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then I go to the conference and so, you know, I know Mel and I know I've talked about this and I know I understand logically that this is across all professions that this is happening, right? Like I understand that logically, but there's just still some part of me that for some reason thought that maybe the National Conference of Psychologists would somehow have some inclination to host it in a way that would represent, you know, respect for the situation and the fact that they have, you know, disabled therapists or people at risk, you know, clients and all those sorts of things, right? Because many of us are clinicians too, and like going back to clinical work. But Mel, I mean, I'd be lucky to say there was like 1 in 20 people in a mask if it's actual numbers.
That's terrible.
And I mean, I was happy to see that many of the people wearing masks were wearing sort of the proper respirator quality. But by and large, those individuals sort of representing what I would say my profession were largely conducting themselves in a way that they would have pre-pandemic. Right? There was sanitizer bottles hosted outside the conference, but in reality, there was no checks of the real things we know, like air quality. Like I had my Aeronet there and they were still packing people into, you know, relatively small rooms, chair to chair to chair, fully packed rooms. You know, I have the readings of one afternoon of where I went, you know, went to the room, I left my airnet in there and was hanging outside so I didn't have to be in there. You know, I go into the room to watch the talks and it's, you know, running at about 800 PPN. And, you know, within an hour, it's up to about 1600. And they're just, everybody's staying in there for hours. And then there's, you know, gatherings at the ending. And I mean, people can state that this is sort of going back to life and living with it. I disagree. I think that living with it does not mean that we just go back to what we were doing and pretend like it's not having an effect on the people that it's continuing to have effect on and that are dying, including the fact that we see the weekly stats that came out. Deaths still are either flat, like plateaued or going up. We saw it go up back up to 50, right, in the last situation report that they gave us, which is a bit old data as we're always working with, but it was really angering as a whole. And I knew people there, you know, and I don't know if they listen to sort of the podcast or not, and if they do, I'm sort of happy because it means they're willing to engage in it. And but it was just wholly disappointing as a whole, just all of it, that we often pride ourselves, or psychology likes to state a lot of words about it being about equity and all these sorts of things, but at the end of the day, I'm looking around, seeing really what we think of ableism, what we think of these things, because those communities have told us these things already, right? And we are clearly not respecting that and doing anything about it. And I am concerned, and I'll say that as a clinician, about the individuals that, you know, would attend such conferences, not take precaution measures, and then go back to clinical work. You know, I do hope that they're taking into account in their risk assessments what that means for other people, right? What that carries on to and who that carries on to, because this false notion that public health has given us, that we are doing personal risk assessments, it is just that, it's false. Otherwise we would not still be seeing people dying at the hands of COVID and people who've been trying for 2 years to stay safe.
Everyone's acting like this is done and over. I mean, did you see some of the photos that came out of that virologist conference?
Oh,
It's a
Lord.
conference full of virologists, and barely any of them are masked. And the one few people who are wearing baggy blues, like, no one's in a respirator. There's not enough dialogue about this,
Well,
you know,
and
and.
that was the interesting thing I said, because I was talking with another person who's in psychology about sort of the stuff that was at the CPA conference, which is the Canadian Psychological Association. And you know, I saw sort of some papers on the pandemic and like reactions to protections and stuff like that. But where is our voice on the role we have to play in public communication? Where is the voice on psychology in ensuring equity in public health? Because we have a role to play in that, and we're not playing it.
No, from day one, there was not enough done to educate on the type of masks and respirators you need, on how even the virus transmits. I mean, there's been obfuscation from day one from various different places for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's just it's frustrating when we can have so many, you know, faculties and so many you know, professionals that are so good at utilizing evidence-based skills and critical thinking skills, but still fall to this sort of cognitive dissonance regardless. And we cannot just keep excusing more and more deaths of more and more vulnerable people to state that we just want to go back to life. Like, that's insanity, at least in my world.
But I mean, peer pressure still very much happens as an adult,
Well,
right?
I'm broken, right? I've never I don't I'm that person that's always sort of saying an uncomfortable thing, mostly because I just feel compelled to stand up for people. And I swear, Mel, we've talked about this before. Like, I feel like I was born like that, just always having to sort of do that. And many of the people that are doing this now also feel the same. And it's like, how the hell do we get everybody else to be like that?
Right? To just speak out. Most people don't, though. Most people
Not even to
are
speak out, but to have empathy and recognize what could be. Because that's the thing. I don't do this because I see what's wrong. I do it because I see what we could do so much better. Right? I can imagine what it would be like if we actually had the community that we need. And I don't know if it's just like a lack of creativity on the parts of these people that they can't even picture that, but why would you not fight for that? I'm having a moment, clearly, that the conference. Oh, it was just right. I was, yeah. It is just so frustrating. You know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. I don't know what else to do, right? And we can have the information and we can educate people, and it's like people are willfully blind, to borrow from Sam, you know? And it feels like it's so big sometimes, it's hard to punch through.
The misinformation and the amount of misinformation out there is also really difficult for people to digest. I think that needs to be addressed. Like the minimizers did a great job minimizing the impacts of COVID. People are not even discussing long COVID until now recently. And some people don't know even what long COVID is. Like, there's not enough dialogue about this,
I would say
let alone
many in the
education.
general population still don't know what long COVID is.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
Like,
a it's a it's a in information gap that's happening. Like, there's just this missing piece for the populace to understand, like, to connect A to B, to understand their part, you know,
we knew
and
that would be a missing piece because when they started to take the data, that was the point, right?
that's
When we
right.
don't have to deal or say what the actual long-term outcome is, it's easy to obscure that. And that's the, you know, that's the database, right? Which, as you saw, we added to again. So we have fairy cancellations in there now.
I saw that.
just sort of trying to pick up anything we can and sort of put the data together. And I was talking with the Protect Our Province New Brunswick earlier on their sort of weekly talk, and they might be interested in sort of looking at starting one for New Brunswick as well, which, yeah, I would love to sort of start spanning out. If we can get like a person that's willing to do the data part behind it and sort of data science it in the background, then I could help any of the provinces set it up. But it's just the maintenance, right? Like I have to go in and check it regularly, and it's doable, and we need this information because, as you see, there's still sort of, I mean, John Horgan today. God, let me find my tweet that I had. John Horgan made a statement about healthcare and pretty much said it's Trudeau's fault, right? Like that sounds familiar.
Oh, I'm so tired of that talking point. It's just so ridiculous.
Right, so his big line in this was, I'll read, this is a direct quote from his statement a few hours ago. Canada's public healthcare system began as a 50-50 partnership, but the federal government's contribution has shrunk to just 22%. This is not sustainable for our healthcare system, and we cannot afford to wait. Today, I renew my call to the federal government to provide their fair share and cover 35% of the costs. First of all, John Horgan, why would they cover our costs when you've literally let large portions of our rapid tests and our vaccines expire? Right?
225,000 vaccines are going to be thrown out by
But Mel, that's
July.
on top of the already over 600,000 that they got rid of before that.
Yes.
Right?
They
While
it's like
restricting
that's
them.
like yeah, it's like a million vaccines, and how many people
And
should have their
did
fourth
Dear
booster
Henry
by
say?
now?
What did you see what Dear Henry said in response to the questions?
She told us to take a cruise.
Right, she made some weird I didn't actually watch this video over because I couldn't keep myself up to it. I was busy. A she I don't she just looked very intense. But B, weird comments. And then C, John Horgan today, when asked by a reporter about this comment, was like, it's just, I don't know, you shouldn't be asking that question. It's like, what exactly does the government think that their role is? I don't understand what's happening anymore. Nobody has a job. Nobody will answer any questions or provide any data in support of what they're doing. We're just blind. And then Horgan pulled back the museum today.
Yeah. He said
So.
he made the wrong call and he's learning. And I'm like, that's great. That's great. Thank you. Now can we please properly ventilate,
Okay, but he said
the
that
schools
while
and the
being
hospitals?
snotty, while being snotty to people about it, and then also said when in asked response about the money that he wasn't doing it at the cost of the other systems, and then also snarkily said that maybe the public can figure out how to make it cheaper. So an apology is not an apology when it comes with asshattery, okay?
But he's an angry white man, an angry
Seriously.
privileged white man,
Oh, and he
right?
had to
Like,
like cut it back because the public outcry was so large. And what was he going to say when our healthcare system's falling apart and there's a random citizen running a freaking healthcare system page and he's off spending money, $1 billion on a museum, right? Like
yeah.
he finally realized how bad this looked and pulled it back, but it's too, that was way too late,
So
right?
late. I mean, random citizens running public health stuff, like even the BC COVID tracker moms, Kathy and Andrea. I mean, have they gotten any funding? Have they been paid for all their work
No,
they've
if anything,
done?
they've called them into doubt every chance that they've had, which is so frustrating, right? It's like
Yeah.
these are things, and you know this, Mel, because you've been with me since the beginning. These are things I offered to the government, right? These are things that I do. Like I did a contract with Canadian Public Health Association in the last 2 years working on data stuff, right? Like this is stuff I literally do and offer to do for free for them, and they just don't want the people to have information. I'm sorry, but
That's nuts. That's
all
bonkers.
everything that's in the bchospitaldata.com stuff is all freely available data. It's just not stuff that they're putting into easily accessible formats because then that would what make it easy to understand what's going on. And when you look at the COVID data, you know, if I go to the COVID data page, you see, well, it's actually not that great of a situation because if we look from, you know, April 2nd to June 16th, well, we went up and now we've pretty much plateaued to actually where we were in April, which probably means we're not going to go down again, Mel, right? And the deaths have only gone up, right? Like we're at 50 per week for that 30-day all-cause mortality past week. It was 11 when they started in April. Like what, like, and lots of the times when I talk to people about this, they don't seem to realize, you know, what's going on or that just as many people are dying. And they've done such an effective job at misinformation. It's truly heartbreaking, actually.
And what's mind-blowing is that it's our tax dollars that have funded this misinformation.
Well, that's the wild part,
Right?
right? It's like,
Yeah.
I am actively paying taxes to the people that blocked me from their government site from commenting about their own data, right?
Yeah.
Like that's an actual thing, is that I'm paying them to block me on like what? Oh, it's so frustrating. But and none of the numbers support what they're saying, right? Like, and it's so frustrating because the media still, you know, I saw all of the stuff last week, like COVID hospitalizations down compared to the previous week. And it's like, yeah, but in the same report, it said there were more deaths, right? What are you talking about? Why are we always cherry picking this stuff?
But they're not even educating or discussing the topic of not counting the people who are dying 30 days
Right,
post-COVID infection.
right,
Like they're
right.
just because you catch COVID and you don't immediately end up on a ventilator doesn't mean that your death 6 months later or 4 months later from your pneumonia you can't shake from COVID. And you die from it, they don't count that death. And no
Right, like
one's talking about that.
there's the two people I know, which I mentioned, right? And I'm not going to give any more information about that,
Yeah.
other than who they are. But they're, you know, in their 30s, within Canada, I'll say, you know, both have had COVID within the last 3 months, and both are were hospitalized within the last week for pneumonia. And those things are becoming more regular, and that's not something we should be normalizing, you know? That's not a great thing, but that doesn't seem to be the case. And we know that the excess deaths within BC are so wrong. And you know, what about, did you see the sort of posts about the coroner stuff with BC?
Yeah.
Can you remind me what that was? I'm gonna try and find that.
About the, is this about the heat dome death?
No, about that BC coroner's, like, because we've had that conversation about how the coroners within BC are very linked with Bonnie Henry.
Well, they're
Because,
privatized.
right.
Our coroner service is privatized.
Right, and you don't actually really need any formal education, or and you're not like a medical person or anything.
Yeah.
And I only say this because I literally was planning to be a coroner before I was a psychologist and like went to a job shadow and stuff. Like, so I've like
Oh,
been,
wow.
and in BC particularly, like there's just no sort of oversight of it. And this of course plays their advantage. And I literally made a post during a presser a few months ago because Henry said, like, I'm very close with the coroner and we're going to be working on this together. And I
Yes,
was
I
like,
remember this.
oh no, this is
I
not
remember
good.
this. But then you have Dr. Moriarty's reports, right? And then the other Health Canada reports about how our deaths are like fivefold undercounted, fivefold. Like, is the BC coroners fudging the numbers or what's going on?
Well, I'm completely hypothesizing here, so I'm going to say this, that I've not seen any evidence of this. I'm just completely being theoretical here. Is my thought has always been, if it was going to be anyway, it would be really easy to be calling these natural cause deaths for the elderly, is probably where we're losing it. Because even early on in the pandemic, so if you remember when my grandma was sort of well, sick and dying, they weren't moving them even to the hospital. They were just keeping them in the long-term care, and they were never even counted in the hospitalizations and those sorts of things. And now that we're not testing in the long-term cares, I don't doubt that if an individual dies, they're not going to test for COVID, Mel. We know that. They would not do something that would willingly increase the count of the numbers. I believe that they wouldn't do that.
So, do you think it's just like a data entry error, or do you think
Oh,
they are
I think it's
physically moving
willful.
the people into a different area and not counting them,
No,
and they're sitting with
no.
the rapid tests that are
No.
expiring?
No, I'm way too diabolical there. No, I mean, it's more of like, if think about this, if we've fostered this sort of thought, even among the professionals, right, that this is no big deal and this is not likely the cause, you know. I've seen something like, let's see, where was it? On the long-term care under the outbreaks. So we have two outbreaks that are ongoing right now. We had three. One just ended with COVID. But for example, there's an active outbreak in the Resthaven Lodge long-term care in Sydney, BC, and you know, has been ongoing since May 19th. The cause is respiratory or influenza-like illness. And you know, Mel, given my experience with BC and long-term care, I'm like, well, did you test? Because I don't actually know if I would expect it would be their policy to test. Right, like, because that wasn't their policy. My grandma was sick for days before they finally tested her
That's terrible.
because she didn't match whatever they were saying was the symptom profile. And we know that BC has been very much matching to symptom profiles and then doing things based on that. So for me, it's hard to believe like they would even be testing, and there's probably not deaths. And deaths at home, we saw that, right? Like an increase in deaths at home, and that we don't have the causes for, and that's part of the excess deaths. So I don't think it's a factor of like they're not putting down it when they know it. I think it's probably they're not checking for it in most cases, so it would just never be
Yikes.
counted as part of it,
Is
right? The
this.
two people that are in the hospital right now, months after COVID, they're never counted as part of the COVID hospitalizations, right? Because it's out of that 30-day period, and same with deaths.
Wow.
So, you know, if anything, the fact that the patterns are still showing us we've plateaued and are not at these good levels should be sort of horrifying, because we know that the excess deaths are hiding out there.
And our wastewater levels are just shooting up. Like, they're not going down at all.
Okay, but there's a huge mismatch right now between the federal and the provincial data. So we have no idea what's going on, because the federal system's showing completely different numbers. And we know that BC has a history of not submitting the information to Public Health Agency of Canada until, like, months afterwards. And with the excess deaths, when Moriarty was looking, it was like everyone else had given into, like, well into the 2021, and BC was still back in, like, November 2020. They'd submitted up till then.
Oh my goodness.
So this is literally their game. It's like the minimum amount of data we can produce is possible, to make it really difficult to say either way what it is. At least that's my hypothesis, as I say.
Right, because was it Alberta and BC are the two provinces where we can get our fourth booster, but, like, the rest of Canada is no problem, right? Like,
well, yeah, so we have that going on too.
And then the US, anyone can get a fourth booster.
Well, and that we know that they just, that paper on delayed doses. So where it's like, are you holding us hostage for another paper? Or, like, there, it's so sketchy right now. And as again, Bonnie Henry has not been expected to actually give any data the entire pandemic. So why would she think she has to give it now? And she doesn't. Look what's happening.
But she's still testing our blood samples without our knowledge for antibodies. And she's not notifying the people. That's what's the crazy part about the study.
Well, and the worst, what to me is actually the craziest part is that this can happen and we can have this information and we have no way of getting answers from our public health office about this. Right?
Yeah.
That we had the Little Mountain Place report, and that I have all this information about the outbreak at my grandma's home, and I can't go anywhere with this information. I have tried every avenue, and nobody will have a conversation about these things. Right? So what exactly are citizens supposed to do when the only avenues we have, nobody will even respond to for years?
Yeah. And no one has a chance to get, like, their blood. Anyone's blood test is done through Life Labs. That's privatized. Like, that's long gone, privatized.
Well, Island Health signed a contract with them, right? If I'm recalling correctly.
A private company giving our blood samples to this woman to do a science experiment on without our consent.
Well, and I honestly don't know. I haven't taken enough a close enough look at the paper to understand where the data came from to make any clear statements about that. I had many concerns, like people did, as soon as that study came out, to wondering where the data was from. But not only that, but by the fact that Henry makes the decisions about whether ethics is sort of needed or not needed is very questionable, in my opinion, given that she's also making the decisions about where the stuff is going and what she's testing it on. So to me, that seems very strange.
It's not even like a well-designed experiment, because there's just so many conflicts. Like, wow, there's no controls. There's no checks and balances.
Well, and she's lost the trust of a lot of people. Not that that's different than most places right now. Unfortunately, we're seeing that sort of across spectrums, but BC in particular just really doesn't want to give data, right? And they really don't want to own what they're doing. That's the thing, is Henry wants to be this, like, motherly, paternalistic, necklaced lady with her flu bugs and go to Canucks games. And she is just sticking it out, right? God, I just wish she'd quit.
How have the freedom of information attempts been in the past? Like, everything's pretty much redacted, right?
Oh, yeah. They give us barely anything.
Do you know someone, like, has to physically go through every document that's been requested and choose what to review and what not to review, because there's a whole process in the Freedom of Information request. Like, there's literally someone who says, no, I'm not, I'm going to redact this. Like, it's someone.
Well, and they don't even tell you choosing. What you're not, they don't tell you what you're not getting, right?
Yeah, no, they don't tell you.
So they'll just say we're holding stuff back because of privacy. So you don't ever know, like, how many documents there are, what exists there, all those sorts of things. The information's slowly trickling out, but no, I mean, they're holding a line on this. And as we've seen with Horgan, like, he... despite his apparent apology today, which was really just a forced situation, right? Like, he had to do something because of the conflict that came out of it across all sort of sides towards him for the how large that budget was. While all the systems are failing and everybody's paying gasoline prices over $2, right? Like, he wasn't gonna be able to survive that sort of decision. Now he's trying to backtrack it, but it's too late, right? Like, everybody saw what his priorities were, which is not the community. So
I just hope they have a plan to address our collapsing system. I hope they have a plan to get people's fourth boosters out. I hope they just open walk-ins and just let people access them. I mean, this could have been handled so much differently had they just thought the long-term logistics through, like we've discussed, right? Like, how they didn't plan anything for longevity in the way they tried to manage this.
Excuses, because we laid out the plan, you know, a year and a half ago now. Like, there's no, and I'm not saying that with hubris, right? Like, I'm just saying that the fact that there were answers and we had them and people tried to get them to them and they actively refused to see them. And there's no excuses anymore.
Yeah, we're almost 3 years in this. And
wow. And we're doing the same thing with monkeypox, right? Like,
yeah. There's how many cases are there now in Canada?
So 211 was the update today. I just updated it. And the BC one, right? Like, so if we just focus on BC, which is only at 2 cases, apparently, which we know will not be at 2 cases for long, but the second case, they came out and said, okay, here's case number 2. They did not travel anywhere, and they're not a known contact. Thanks, guys!
Yeah, that means it's airborne. Hello! Like it's always been airborne. Like, it's so you have no clearly idea where stated. They got it. Yeah, okay.
Cool. This sounds really familiar.
Right? No, it's going to explode out of control unless they put NPIs back in place and masking in public spaces.
I attended EFD's and Yanir's World Health Network talk earlier about the monkeypox, and they were having an interesting chat about it. And they declared a pandemic over at World Health Network, which is, I believe, WHO is meeting tomorrow about it as well. So we'll probably be hearing more from them. But they were making an interesting sort of discussion about monkeypox in that, unlike sort of what we've seen with COVID, where the older individuals and sort of compromised adults were the first to get really sick and die, and we saw that impact really fast, that perhaps monkeypox will be have a very different profile because of the fact that it hits kids so hard. I think the average was around age 10, they said. And because of that, it's sort of insidious in that way of it may pass through the adults in these first sort of few months where we're not really noticing that spread because it's mild in adults. But potentially, you know, if it went to children, that the profile would be very, very different.
There's all kinds of crazy viruses making a comeback right now. There's polio in UK. There's polio in the UK right now. Polio has made a comeback.
And you know what's wild, Mel, is I truly don't understand how so many proposed experts go up there and pretend like they don't know that mass infection with a virus was probably bad for our immune systems as a global community.
Right? Like,
that how... just seems silly.
Right?
Genuinely silly. Like,
it's
like,
okay to infect yourselves with SARS over and over again, but because you guys renamed it COVID, a new cutesy name, people are supposed to forget it's actually SARS. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, and it
right. The research coming out now is it's It's damning. Like, there is no such thing as herd immunity. The damage is cumulative to your immune system every
Well,
single time you get hit with
I've
it.
seen comments on that paper because there was that comment or that paper specifically that came about the reinfections, and of course the regulars sort of said stuff about it. You know, the Baloo, whatever his name is, call all those sort of people were talking about that reinfection paper, and then others were like, yeah, but that's like a really poor health sample. And I'm like all of us right now, you dumb shits. Like, holy moly. There's so many people who are getting sick with bad colds and like ending up hospitalized, and nobody seems to be paying attention to the disease we mass infected everybody with that appears to have immune system functioning outcomes. I don't understand, Mel. I
Yeah,
need
I know.
This is my literal problem. Like, I'm saying this in a genuine way, is I don't understand how other people don't see it. And this is my problem always in life, is I get the connections and I don't understand how people aren't seeing that, and it makes me really frustrated.
Understand. Yeah. Like, we've been warning everyone for almost 2 years now, and
Well, and what? And then
it's
what's going
painful,
to happen,
yeah.
Mel, is that World Health Organization is going to call a pandemic, and all the fucking minimizers are going to come out saying that they're overreacting, and all the maximizers are just saying, I told you so. And it's like, because everything we say, you fucking ignore, and it still happens.
Yeah.
Like, what else are we supposed to say? Look, you dumb shits.
It's not a good idea ever to, allow yourself to be infected with something that's novel, for one, because you don't know what the long-term damage is, and two, like, why would you allow yourself to get infected with
And
something that you don't
well,
know
and it's
what
like
it
public health
does?
has stopped being the agency that tries to reduce our life, like they're reducing our life expectancy at this point. Like, they're making plans to not control diseases, right? You know, and somebody came into, actually, interestingly, someone came into that monkeypox talk earlier, from a herpes organization, and went off into a vein about whether they should declare herpes a pandemic. And they cut them off because it was like, well, clearly it's not, changing and growing in an exponential way that's sort of changing its spreadability and all those sorts of things, right? Like, we have all these false equations right now against these things. And I thought we would be better at this by 2 years into this. But if anything, the general population believes us even less now.
But that's part of the cognitive warfare that's going on, right? NATO released a huge report stating that, cognitive warfare is ongoing and amplified by social media, and this we know. And it hasn't stopped, and everything that we're dealing with right now, from the minimizers that say, hey, it's a good idea to nuke your immune system, to people who are saying, hey, it's just a little smallpox, it's mild smallpox. This is all part of the cognitive warfare. It's meant to destabilize our society. The stochastic rhetoric is meant to divide us and to pit us against each other, because that's exactly part of the warfare plan,
But
right?
Mel,
We're
this is what I don't
engaged.
understand, is history has shown us where this takes us. It collapses. We know
Yes.
this, where this goes.
But this is part of the warfare. It's
But
part and
why? I don't
parcel.
even understand why the bad people want to do this. Like, why do they want to do this? None of us are going to make it okay or better from this, right? Like, even the rich people, eventually when this comes down, man, it's going to be just ugly, right? Like, maybe the rich people will get out of it. I don't know. I'm not a
The
rich
rich
person.
people, like Elon Musk, they honestly believe they're going to go to Mars, and the rest of us are going to just be like
Peons.
perish. Yeah, we're peons. We're peons, and the rest of them are going to go to Elysium, like that Matt Damon film,
But this is what I mean. It's like the it's just yeah, it's not working for anybody, right? Like, it's a mess for everybody. And with everything that's going on worldwide, it's like these things aren't going to get easier and these issues with staffing aren't going to go away. And we have leadership right now that has no long-term plan, like no plan. And because they won't even acknowledge basic awareness of what the true problems are. None of them will own up to it because as soon as one of them falls, all the domino falls, right? Like if VC suddenly sort of admits to bad planning with taking or, you know, taking away protections or their plans with school or anything like that, or COVID is airborne, right? That affects every other province, if not every other country, right? All the dominoes are built around this. It's just a stack of cards, right?
It is a stack of cards, and they're all ass covering. Because if they don't cover their asses, what's going to happen? There's going to be mass lawsuits, class action lawsuits, wrongful death lawsuits, well, and negligence we see suits.
That some of that stuff's already coming, right? Like, there have been a couple cases now about a work site in central Canada that was responsible, right, for those COVID conditions that led to a death, right? And now there's the long COVID that has been confirmed as disability for one person. Like, they can't run forever. Accountability will come for them. Yeah. Right. And that's why we keep this data. That's why we do these things that we do. But it's feeling really fucking slow right now.
It is very slow. It's painful to witness, right? And because we're aware, that's what makes it painful.
It's deadly. People are dying.
Yeah.
Right? Every day, people are still dying, and more are going to, whether we're talking about COVID, whether we're talking about, you know, whatever climate disasters hit Canada this summer, whatever happens with the, whatever poison drug supply we get the next time we have to do something in terms of Canadian borders, like, it's just becoming cumulative. And that's what we're seeing, right? The mental health problems are going to increase as society destabilizes. And that's, you know, that's documented historically.
Collapse. The total collapse.
People say, like, what is collapse? It's not something that just happens, right? We're in it. We're fucking in it, friends. Like, it is slow and insidious and it's mind-changing and normalizing. And once upon a time, I know it's so hard for people to realize, but zero deaths was normal from COVID. That was our normal. And then it became 5 deaths was okay. Now we're at 10 deaths is okay, right? Like, we normalize.
And 1 kid a week.
Now, now there's kids in every situation report that die.
I know.
Once upon a time, my hashtag was no kids dead in BC Ed.
That was like over a year ago. That was, you know, what we were trying to aim for.
That was where I started, was no kids dead in our province.
And but then remember, that. Do you remember how they normalized it though? They said that child had pre-existing conditions. Do you remember that? They had comorbidities.
As mine.
But then that's how they habituated us to just slowly accept this.
Well, and it's regular rhetoric now.
Yeah.
Right? The reaction to this reinfection paper, people say, well, it's not a very healthy population because people have cardiac risk factors or diabetes. Welcome to your colleagues and everyone around you.
Yeah. People are still not discussing the fact that they don't know once you catch COVID once, it increases your risk of having a cardiovascular disease, a heart disease, and diabetes incrementally.
Especially when we're talking about quick reinfections, right?
Yeah.
When people are still in that recovery phase and still having these after effects on their systems, and then they get reinfected within like 3 to 6 weeks. Yeah, your body is not going to do well with that.
Sudden adult death syndrome. Remember, I was reading about that. Oh, he's got the sads.
No, I got suspended on Twitter for mocking that.
Did you really?
Yeah, last week I got suspended for an hour because
you put a timeout.
Yeah, somebody mentioned how there were excess deaths, and I mockingly said, "Oh, it must be that sudden adult death syndrome," and then I got suspended.
So. Wow,
that was fun.
They can't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But it's, I don't know. I'm really worried over the summer, and they're pumping tourism, and it's like, how are our hospitals going to deal with with this stuff, right? Like, we already see search and rescue struggling, and we just lost somebody in search and rescue in the interior. And putting all these pressures on all these people, because all these services are people, right? Like, let's remember this. All these essential service and frontline service workers, they're people that have been nonstop. Well, and Horgan and Dix are out there saying, we have all these unfilled positions. Why do you think you have unfilled positions? Mm-hmm. You have discounted their lives and their very being every opportunity you have had.
The amount of former colleagues on my Facebook timeline that are retiring this year, I can count over with two hands right now. It's actually quite astonishing. We're in so much trouble as a province. Our education system's not going to have enough teachers, and our hospitals are not going to have enough nurses and doctors. I don't know how this is going to get better.
Well, and I hear, you know, I hear them talking on a podcast today about, you know, learning loss. Here we go, Mel, with the learning loss again that's coming up. And they mention virtual school, but then they mention the second part of what's actually causing kids to be behind, which is the fact that there were so many substitute teachers coming into classrooms, it was disruptive because teachers were getting sick so often that they had to be out of their class.
Yes. That has to be taken into consideration too, right? When you have three or four TOCs in your classroom, TTOCs in your classroom, it's very difficult. Because, it's very difficult to manage.
Teachers and nurses and frontline staff are not, they're not, what's the word I'm looking for? Exchangeable. No. Like, you can't just take a teacher who works with grade twos and is wonderful with this group of students and put them in this other class of like grade sevens and expect it to be the same, or a nurse who's working in, you know, general emergency and then has to go over to like the inpatient forensics wards because they need fill-in. That's not the same thing, and it's not proper client care.
No, but,
and we are seeing that coming out, right? I saw, what was it, Andre Picard's story today with the TAI was about the decline in patient care, the fact that as these staffing shortages hit, as we see the exchange and new people really taking over that are less experienced, the quality in our care is declining.
Absolutely. And that same thing would be for a classroom teacher. You know, you're going to have a vastly different classroom where you have a fresh new graduate from PDP and then you have a 15 plus year experienced teacher teaching a classroom. There's going to be a huge difference, right? There's even a lack of mentorship now, right? Because you have mid-level, mid-phase nurses and teachers leaving the profession. And the old ones are just going to retire, early retirement, if they can, right? Our workforce is going to be drastically changed in the next, I would say, 6 to 8 months. There's gonna be a reckoning because it cannot be sustained this way. There's no way. This is sustainable.
Actually, let me read you the title. I just want to check the date on this one, if this was today. Oh, no, this is from June 2021. June 2021. So it was yesterday. So in the TAI, there was an article called Battling the Crisis in Patient Safety. So COVID and an overburdened system have made patient safety incidents Canada's third largest cause of death.
Wow.
Patient safety incidents. That's horrifying.
Is that due to just the lack of like staff ratio to the patient?
It's just exacerbated the existing challenges, it says. According to a 2019 report from the Canadian Patient Safety Institute, Canada was already facing a public health crisis, blah, blah, blah. Patient safety incidents are the third leading cause of death in Canada following cancer and heart disease.
Wow.
And this is going to get worse, right? Like that, and this is what I'm saying, is the things that we just talked about, that's not going to improve that. It's going to become increasingly unsafe and increasingly undignified, the care that people receive. And the fact that we're not talking about that, the fact that it's already happening and we're not talking about that, is sad. It's tragic, and it's a failure of all of our systems put together, and it will impact the ones that are already most burdened by the cost of these things, right? It will be the intentionally ignored community. It will be the racialized. It will be the lower class. It will be those individuals that always pay the price of our poor decisions of policy.
And our frontline workers. The highest work safe claim we see are healthcare workers and educators right now.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I would say, like, both mental health and physical health wise, right? Like, we're not even talking about the mental health outcomes of the healthcare workers that have had to work in this, or the teachers who felt like their lives have been put at risk just for trying to do their job of teaching students. And sometimes in situations where they felt like they had to keep doing it for their students in those sorts of situations. And yeah, we're in that, we can't deal with those things yet because we're still in the crisis. And that's the horrifying part, is we can't even start to deal with the outcomes of it because it's still ongoing.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is where the managerial lens is struggling. And I think this is where people like Dixon Horgan, and where they apply a managerial lens to replacing people, because a teacher is a teacher, a nurse is a nurse.
Exactly.
This person is, right? They don't see that it's individualized client care, that, you know, there's specific skills, right, that match a specific situation. But they're just they're looking at it with a managerial lens, where this, you know, teacher's a teacher, nurse is a nurse, so it doesn't matter who goes in. And that's why they're burning everyone out.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I don't remember the stats I saw, but, you know, the staffing, we are at just horrifying levels within the healthcare system, right? And the fact that almost, you know, a fifth of our population doesn't have a primary care doctor, and now our urgent care and healthcare centers are massively understaffed. I don't know how we're going to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And while we've seen, you know, last summer someone died in one of the ER waiting rooms, we see these things that happen. That's not the cost of doing business, right? Like, that's, no. This is what they keep telling us, is like, this is, we have our Vancouver Coastal Health officers keep telling us, like, it's, we don't need to implement these things for safety unless we have, you know, trials to show us it would be worth it. And it's like, you don't think that maybe saving some lives would be worth it? That's our public health. Right? They are literally out on Twitter pretty much doing cost analyses on the lives of disabled people, saying that's okay. Of course, the population and the general population is saying it's okay. Look at their role models.
Leadership has such an effect on how people handle crises. Like, they need to realize how important the role is, because they do set the tone. They do set the tone.
And over 2 years of a pandemic, instead of doing what would actually help the pandemic and driving up our community factors, right? Driving up our community responsibility, we've done everything to do the opposite. We have pushed individual responsibility. We have taken away the tools to manage within our communities. And we have essentially pitted neighbor against neighbor by not having policies that people have to follow.
Yeah, and left our frontline workers out to dry. They've just been hung out to dry. I mean, what was the BCTF had a huge survey this school year. And what was the results? It was like 30% of teachers were ready to quit.
Yeah, a third.
Yeah, a third. That's huge.
Well, we see the same in healthcare, though, right? We see that with nurses. We see all these positions. Let's remind ourselves that they're often racialized and non-male-led occupations right now that are often at the brunt of this. And the cost of living too right now. It's all weaved together, right? And
mm-hmm.
The government continues to sort of refuse to give a good picture of it. And again, that's why I'm going to keep sort of building the directory, and why we keep building the directory is that just to have some sort of information for people and keep track of what's failing, because it is failing, right? That's what's happening right now. There's things failing and they're just not talking about it. Right? Like if you even just look at BC Ferries, like look at the airlines, right? Like all these places that pulled their masks and now are suffering staff closures over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's a pretty clear correlation. Sick,
right?
Yes, it's a clear like correlation. Come on.
Like you see, if you look at the ferry cancellations, you know, in like the last month, it's like it's nonstop. And these things aren't changing, and the sickness in the hospitals and stuff like that, like it's happening because we have no protections anymore, and it's going to keep happening. These staffing issues are going to keep happening because we're not doing anything to prevent it.
And I think that's the point that needs to be like emphasized. Like the pandemic doesn't just stop on its own through magical thinking. It's not living with it.
That we don't have it.
Yeah. Like you to stop the pandemic, you physically have to do something to stop it from spreading.
Because human behavior is what spreads it. It does not spread itself. Right? It does not spread itself. Human behavior is part of it. And we did not have social media. We did not have the travel capacities we had before in previous pandemics. And we've just seen all of these factors come together in this beautiful rainbow of disaster for us, where now, I mean, look at the variants that are coming out of this, right? Like it's had a look at our DNA and had a real nice look. And it's going to have the opportunity to change. And, you know, I'm seeing some of the stuff I was looking at earlier today about some of the Omicron subvariants being, again, moving back towards that lung sort of symptomology, right? That it's coming back to that, hopefully not, but sort of looking more like that original strain of COVID instead of, you know, the more recent subvariants. And that's the entire concern, right?
I got nothing left.
Well, we keep recording, right? And that's what we do. And that's what we've kept doing. And it is the action that we have access to. And we continue to build community, because community is where the answers come and giving that knowledge, because that's what they're trying to take away, right? So we give it back.
Incredible.
We got to do something, right?
Yeah.
Unless anybody has some dying questions, we probably won't take any questions tonight. But if you do, you're more than happy to sort of come up as a speaker. I'm just sort of feeling tired after the last week. I was away all weekend and just came in. So we're doing this recording tonight. But we'll probably have a space on Saturday night, the 7:30 we normally have. But we're not going to record that one. We'll just have a chat because we did this recording tonight. So if anybody wants to come back on Saturday night and sort of have more of a conversation privately, we'll do an unrecorded space there. And I'll post about that. Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that.
Yeah. So if you're all good, Mel, I'll sort of call it for the night. And then we'll be back here on Saturday.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm going to say thank you to our listeners.
Thank you for the listeners that came.
Yes.
Well, we'll see you on the weekend if you're there.
Oh, thank you.